Well, hello there, this is Trending Now with Josh Arnold. On this Friday, I'm Rick Moore, along with Josh and our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, program we like to run here most Fridays, and we have been for quite a while. And a good stretch.
Yeah, good run, yeah.
All right, so what you got lined up for today?
Amanda Lando Kesterson will talk not about politics and not about the Republican Party, but she will be talking about pancakes. The Rotary Club of Gloucester has its annual pancake breakfast, and she's one of the co-chairs of the event, and she's going to be talking to us about that and about Gloucester Rotary. Brickia Salvia is a candidate for Ward 4 City Council in Peabody. She'll be joining us as our second guest. Third guest is Andrea French, a school committee candidate in Salem. And our fourth guest is Bob Wynot, who's running again for candidate City Council at Large in Gloucester. He had been on the City Council before. He'd been the City Clerk, and he'd been a Ward Councilor in Gloucester back when Leo Alpo was mayor. So. Good round out, good schedule today.
City clerk, too, at one time, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Okay.
After Freddie Kairos.
Yeah. All right. All that's coming up. Hang on.
Score early and often this fall with a low-rate residential loan from the Institution for Savings. The Institution for Savings has fantastic rates, low or no fees, great service, and prompt turnaround. Plus, we service our mortgages in-house, so help is always a local phone call away. For more information or to apply online 24/7, visit institutionforsavingsloans.com or call us at 978-462-2344. Institution for Savings, member FDIC and DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're thinking of replacing the windows in your home, you should look at the Anderson Woodright Double Hung Insert Window, which comes with rich wood interiors in oak, pine, or maple. Quite simply, Anderson is the most trusted window in America. That's why we've been selling them for 57 years. Please see the Anderson Woodright windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our first guest is Amanda Orlando Kesterson, who is a frequent guest on the show talking about politics and so forth. But today you're going to talk with us about Rotary. So welcome to the program.
Thank you, Josh. Thanks for having me back.
Well, you know, I know that, I mean, I've been going to pancake breakfasts forever as a Rotarian. I remember back when Peter Watson was alive, and in the very early days, we were picking the stems off the blueberries down. We were down at the by the Cut Bridge, and we had purple fingers for days. But now we have gloves, and the blueberries don't have stems. Tell us about what the breakfast is like, and how it all comes to play, and how you got involved with it.
Sure. Well, so for the listeners who may not know, the Rotary Club of Gloucester is a group of business people in the community who gather to raise money for charitable groups in our city and on Cape Ann as a whole. So the Rotary groups, and Rotary is an international organization, so there are Rotary groups in many cities and towns that do this. And in Gloucester, our group has been, you know, we have various events all year long that are run by different members, but the pancake breakfast is now in its 34th year, and it's become something of a real community event because it occurs on the Saturday morning of the Waterfront Festival, and it happens right now. It happens up by the bandstand at Stage Fort Park, but back when the Waterfront Festival was along the boulevard, it happened by the Cut Bridge, as Josh, you just said. So the pancake breakfast is a fundraiser that Rotary runs, and we raise money for three groups in our city: the North Shore Health Project, the YMCA Team Leaders, and the Senior Center. And we run this event just to benefit those three groups, and it's become a huge event where we serve roughly 700 people at the breakfast. And the way I became involved was sort of by accident, because I had never even attended the pancake breakfast, even though I've lived in Gloucester my whole life. I always saw the banner and thought, well, that sounds kind of nice, and just kind of went about my way, but I never went to it. And so when I joined Rotary, the leadership team of Rotary was looking for somebody to take over this event, because the former chairman, Howard Frisch, was really looking for someone to pass it along to. He had run it at that point for 32 years. And it's a lot. It's a big event, and there's a lot of moving parts, and it was a lot on Howard. And so I said, sure, I'll do it. And I I had no idea what I was in for, but I'm so glad that I did, because I think it's a great event. It's such a wonderful opportunity for the city to come together. And on a summer morning, you know, it starts at 7 a.m. It's a beautiful day every year. Knock wood, it'll be this year as well. And it's just a great event. So I'm glad they asked me to do it. The first one I ever attended was as a member of Rotary, and this year will be my third pancake breakfast, and I've been running it now. This will be my second year. So it's a great event, and I hope a lot of people will come to it this year as they have in the past.
You know, the year I was for the club president, I attended a couple of the meetings of the pancake breakfast committee, and including the after-event meeting, and sitting in the room, and someone said, you know, next year we need sharper knives, because they were only getting five slices out of an orange, and they should be able to get six. And I thought somebody was joking, but they were dead serious. And I thought, wow. But they have Howard Frisch and Charlie Foster, when he was alive, helped him as chair or second chair or whatever. And they did a marvelous job. But every little they had a. And I'm sure you have it now, but they have an item master list of things that they have to bring, things they have to do, timeline. And it was like a procedures manual. I mean, it was...
Oh, sure. It was Howard is former military, and he's an accountant by trade. So he's very much about numbers and precision and detail, which I really appreciate, because I think when you're running an event like this, the devil is in the details. The reality is we're having an event which is outdoors. Everything that you're going to use at this event needs to be brought there.
Yeah.
So it's not like a function hall that you rent out and they already have tables and chairs set up, or a kitchen right there. It's not like that. You know, you're bringing all the tables, all the chairs, all the supplies, all the cooking stuff, the food ingredients,
the fresh, generators,
non-perishable generators, you know, extension cords. I mean, if you start to add up the number of things you need, because remember, we're in a big open field. It's not set up to run food. So you're showing up and you have to have everything there. And as anyone who lives in Gloucester knows, you do not want to be leaving in the middle of a Saturday morning to go run quickly to the grocery store and have to sit behind the bridge because the cut bridge is up and there's boats coming through and now you've lost an hour. So you really have to make sure that you have everything that you need when you show up at 6 o'clock in the morning. And so Howard, you know, was very, very good, having run it for so many years, at knowing exactly what he would need and making sure everything was where it was supposed to be. And his precision is really to be admired. The other thing he was always really good at was in portion control, because it's a fundraiser and you want everyone to have a great time and have a good breakfast, but you're also trying to make money. So you want to make sure that you're not, you know, that there's control over how much the portions are, so that you don't run out of things or whatever the case may be, or that you can make a profit off of it. So he's very specific about how many slices you have to get out of an orange and how many blueberries have to go into each pancake and how big the pancake should be, so that we always make sure we have enough and we never run out.
I remember.
And it's very overwhelming when you come into, like, when he first presented the list you're referring to me, I just looked at him like, I couldn't believe how much this, you know, how many details there would be to think about. But he had it down to a science.
Well, it's interesting. Dave Gardner, the district governor, posted something on Facebook recently. If you want to see how a good operation runs, check out the Gloucester Rotary Pancake Breakfast. And he knows all the war stories. I got a call from Howard one day, several years ago, saying, I need you to show up at Charlie Foster's house. We have these new guns, is what they ended up calling them, but they were the portion control things. So you pour the battery into that, and then you press a button, and it falls and makes a certain size pancake. And I had to go over there and practice on a grill in the Foster's home before we could actually put them into play. And then other than the years that I've had shoulder surgery or what have you, I've done that one. So
yeah, it's it's actually very much a labor of love for Howard. You know, he truly loves the event, and he wants to make sure that the product is restaurant quality and that the people have a good time. You know, one of the things we do is we give out beads and, you know, flower lay necklaces and toys to little kids because, and that was Howard's idea years ago because he wanted it to be something that people looked forward to and that children looked forward to and that was generational. And it really has been. I mean, every year there are people that walk up to me and they introduce themselves and they say, I've been coming to the pancake breakfast since I was 8.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a great thing. I mean, that's the Rotary Club, you know, obviously we raise a lot of money for good causes, but we're also all from this community. So it's really nice that the members run an event which is so community-oriented. I know many fundraisers aren't. I mean, you're not going to bring kids to a lot of fundraisers or nighttime events. Or, you know, we have a lot of fun things, but they're really not family events. This is a family event.
Yeah.
So you have kids, and then they bring their kids, and it's really, really nice. And I think that's why it's existed for 34 years and probably for another 34.
Well, Paul Harris and three of his friends formed Rotary back in the early part of the 20th century, and it became the name, it drew the name Rotary because they rotated whose office they had in, and they brought their lunch, and it grew into, well, let's go to a hotel and, you know, have them serve us lunch, and it grew from there in Chicago. The first thing that that Rotary ever did was to build a community bathroom in Chicago, and that was, you know, through fundraising. They went out and they built a place where people could stop in and, you know, go to the bathroom if they needed to, a public restroom. And from there, it was off and running and started to create Rotary clubs in other states, and now it's in, I forget how many countries, and there are 1.3 million Rotarians and so forth. Gloucester.
Yeah, I don't think people realize in Gloucester how many projects the Rotary Club has fundraised and created in the city. I don't think people might not realize it when they go around the city that there's Rotary signals, Rotary symbols everywhere.
Yeah.
Because the Rotary Club has been so, how long, I think, Josh, you would know better than I, how long has the Gloucester group been in existence?
We will celebrate our 100th anniversary in 2023, which coincides with the city of Gloucester's 400th anniversary.
That's right.
And,
so almost 100 years now.
And yeah, it's, you know, way back when we raised money to buy equipment for the fire department so they could go into a plant where there was an ammonia leak and help get people out. We bought a van for the, was then Child Development Programs, now Pathways for Children. We've done lots of things over the years. $350,000 that we've put into Stage Fort Park. So,
right.
And just this past year, the level of funding that the Gloucester Rotary Club has given to, some to international, but the majority of it is right here in our backyard, over $107,000. To different groups in Gloucester, including about 10,000 of that in scholarships to people.
Right. I mean, I think one of the things I really appreciate as a mother of three is how Rotary invests in youth. And I think that, you know, you can see that with even this event. We support the YMCA Teen Leaders, which is a great organization run by one of our members, Rick Dowsett. But also, you know, we're constantly giving, you know, bringing youth into our activities, and we have the Interact Club at Gloucester High School, which is basically a youth version of Rotary. And so we're reminding the younger folks how important it is to be of service to your community. And I always have a very special feeling at Rotary meetings because it's a whole bunch of people, 60 to 70 every single Tuesday, that gather together for lunch and to talk about ways to make our city better. And those people are all busy. They all have families and careers and businesses of their own, and they're taking time out of their week and often more than just that lunch because they're working on events and on their own time just to make the city better and contribute to local groups. So I'm really proud to be a Rotarian, and I think, you know, the city gets this first-hand look at what being a Rotarian is when they come to the pancake breakfast, because all of the Rotarians in Gloucester are there. It's It's 100% attendance, and everybody's there helping because it's all hands on deck in order to make this event happen. It's such a large event. And so it's what Rotary, to me, is what Rotary really is about. Everybody pulling together, working as a team, fundraising for good causes, being part of our community, you know, a very positive message of spirit and morale. I think it's just a great event, and I really urge the listeners to come and bring your kids because it's a great morning.
Well, I as we close it out, I'll just share one political story with you about the pancake breakfast. Of course, the mayor of Gloucester, whoever the mayor is in any given year, comes down and gets a photo op in which they flip a pancake and all of that. In 1 year, John Bell was the mayor. It was many years, but one particular year he came down, went to flip the pancake, and it was prematurely flipped. It didn't exactly have enough on it. And Senator Bruce Tarr was standing right next to him, and he came in, and he righted the ship and flipped the pancake and made it all work. And I said, now, how about that? A Republican cleaning up after a Democrat. It's usually the other way around, isn't it? And that was the political story of pancakes. But anyway, thank you for being a guest and sharing with the listening audience all the good things the Gloucester Rotary Club is involved in and helping folks out.
Thanks so much, Josh. Have a great day.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
The Gloucester House Restaurant at historic Seven Seas Wharf, 63 Roger Street, Gloucester. This is owner Lenny Linquata.
We provide service and product better than anybody else. It comes directly from our boats right to your plate. We have fishermen that work great for us. We are wholesalers that we buy what we want to serve to our customers, and we put the rest of it right out in the market.
The Gloucester House Restaurant. Visit thegloucesterhouse.com.
This is the freshest seafood you can get from our boats to your plate.
The Institution for Savings has always believed in giving back to our communities because our communities are such great places to live and work. Last year alone, we donated and pledged more than $3.9 million to local nonprofits, including local hospitals, schools, food pantries, art organizations, and more. Named one of Boston Business Journal's top philanthropic companies, we are proud to be your local hometown bank. InstitutionForSavings.com. Member FDIC, DIF, Equal Housing Lender.
Many aspects of estate planning are interrelated, and you can turn to attorney Bob Madruga for full-service estate planning to help you develop a comprehensive plan in providing for your future. Bob will work with you through the years to adapt your plan as needed, and he can assist you with managing wills, trust, probate, and taxes. Visit the law offices of Robert J. Madruga at 128 Main Street, Gloucester, or call today for an appointment at 978-283-6883.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our next guest is Birkia Shalvia. Did I say that right?
That is correct, Josh. Birkia Shalvia. Thank you for having me.
And she is a candidate for Ward 4 City Council in Peabody. Welcome to the program. We usually start out and say, hey, tell us the 3 or 4 minute bio, and then we can get into some questions about the election and your campaign.
Again, good morning, Josh. It's a pleasure to join you this morning. Thank you so much for having me. My background is small business. I am originally from Haiti. I immigrated to the U.S. with my family in December of 1996. Both of my parents were in the mid-60s. And when we came here, I was actually a week shy from turning 21, and I became the adult, taking care of the caretaker of both of my parents, and I'm still doing that. I am an employee for the Commonwealth. I work for the Office for Refugees and Immigrants. And my husband and I, we are both small business people. We've had many small businesses in the past. My husband ran a car wash for over 40 years, and myself, I had a small advertising agency. I am currently working on putting a network together, TV network, to bring live TV broadcasting to the U.S. That's a long-term project, but actually we are working on that. And now, of course, as you already mentioned, I am a candidate for Ward 4 City Councilor in Beatty.
Great. City councils in different cities and towns where there's a popularly elected mayor, there's a certain level of friction that exists. Some of it's by design, that it's a check and balance system. The mayor will nominate certain people for department heads and boards and commissions subject to the approval of the city council. The mayor proposes a budget, but the city council has to approve of it. You know, those kinds of things. What is your sense of how the rapport is between the mayor and the city council in conducting daily business? How much of is there friction, and is it well placed? Is it petty partisan? How does it work? How should it work?
As you mentioned, city councilor, the whole board for city councilors and the mayor should work in collaboration. Each elected officials are elected to serve the community, to help the community, the city grow. And the good thing about me is that I've worked with many other people, different ethnic background, and I am a great team player. And I think the mayor needs the support that he needs to help improve the city's. And the council or board members have other ideas and vision, too, that could help support the mayor. And I think regardless of our differences, we should sometimes put our differences aside and look at what's better, what would work better for the community, for the voters, for the residents, understanding their needs, and put our differences aside and focus on the residents.
Okay. Walk us through, why do you want to be on the Peabody City Council? What's your motivation for seeking elective office?
I have always been involved in every community I've lived in. I've always find ways to either bring resources to that particular community or other underserved community. I've been on many boards of many nonprofit organizations, volunteering, and also do a lot of grassroots work. So I always look for ways to give back. I came from a very poor country. I am very grateful to be raising my three children in this wonderful country, the USA, which is my home now. And I don't take anything for granted, and I always look for other ways to give back. And since I live in PBD, and I also get involved in PBD. We're paying taxes. We are involved with the school system. And I said, I talked to a lot of people in the PBD area, and some of them had some questions and concerns about their road conditions and sidewalks, and feel like sometimes when they call, they're not getting enough help. And I am the kind of person who likes to take action. And I said, you know what? This would be a great opportunity to give back. I want to get involved. I want to help my neighbors, the residents in Ward 4, and also give back to this wonderful country. This is my motivation for running for office.
Great. What do you think are the most important issues that the mayor or city councilors are going to be talking about this year in the election?
I think they should think about ways to work and improve the quality of life of the residents for all PBD. And I think they should think about, of course, expenses, the budget for the city, and how we can generate more revenues and spend less. That's what I'm hoping that they will focus on this year, and how to create, make the city a better place for the whole community at large.
Good. Now, the change in the marijuana law, allowing it for recreational use, has presented us some levels of challenge at the city and town level in terms of permitting, zoning, enforcement, how that all plays out. Any thoughts that you'd want to share with us about what problems it's creating and how those might be dealt with?
I have attended a city council meeting just to observe the questions about the zoning for recreational marijuana. And I'm surprised that some of the councils brought that up on the table, that the zoning location should be a school-free zone, away from playground, kids' park, and put it more in a more commercial area. And I think they have chosen Route 1. I think that decision was final when the mayor brought it up, and he wanted the council to vote on it on that night. And they have, the council have voted, I believe, 9-2 to have the location around the Wood One, which is a commercial area in Peabody.
Okay. The issue that comes up, that I've asked this folks running in other cities, and it's an enigma of sorts, I guess, because even though it's legal in Massachusetts, there are still federal laws governing its use and sale and so forth, and that creates a problem because it can only be a cash business in terms of banking. So there are all kinds of issues, spin-off issues that come out of that people are apprehensive about, and I guess as time marches on, we'll get a better handle on that. We've got a few minutes left. What social media is having an increased role in the electoral process, but also in communicating with constituents when somebody's in office. Tell us about your use of social media and how you think it will help in your election, and assuming you were to get elected, how it would help you communicate with your constituency.
I love social media. Facebook is a great tool to use, Twitter and LinkedIn, but mostly Facebook and Twitter. It's a great mean to get the message out quickly if you want to send out a message to the residents, the people that are on social media, to share with their friends and their family, give them campaign updates, and of course also ask for their concerns and opinion. It's a great way to remain engaged with the residents, with everyone who are on social media. I feel that we are so blessed to be able to have those tools, and I use them, and I post pictures and I post events. I even go Facebook Live when I go out to live concert, free events in the PBD area. I even paid event too that will help boost the economy in the area. I would encourage anyone running for office to go on social media, open a page, and start a conversation with the constituents, with your friends and families, and with your neighbors.
Great. Kim Driscoll, and Mayor of Salem, and Safathia Romeo-Dakin, the Mayor of Gloucester, both are extensive users of social media. And if there's a power outage or a storm coming or an event happening or a special meeting, no matter what it is, you can expect that they're going to make a posting to it. And it has taken on a life of its own in terms of last few years. Things that wouldn't make the news because it's not a Boston, but things that get out to people. And it's like the shampoo commercial. They tell two people and they tell two people. So I agree with you. It's certainly a very helpful tool and instrument. I want to thank you for taking time out of your busy day to be a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold, and we wish you the very best of luck going forward with your career and your candidacy for Ward 4 City Council.
Thank you so much for having me again, Josh. Have a wonderful weekend. I really appreciate it.
You too. Take care now.
You too.
NewSports.com is known for connecting North Shore sports fans with local sports newsmakers. Features on teams and players. Exclusive video interviews following the big games. Live event coverage such as high school football, basketball, hockey, and baseball. Live video coverage of the Gloucester Fiesta. MSO also connects you to the area news leaders, mayors, state representatives, state senators, town administrators, city and town elected officials, business leaders, and more. Entertainment features. Follow us on Twitter or Facebook at MSO News Sports. Email us at msonewsports@gmail.com. Leave a voice message anytime, 978-325-3638. Stay connected to your North Shore neighbors by simply clicking on msonewsports.com.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our next guest is Andrea French, a candidate for school committee in Salem. Andrea, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you.
Well, we usually start out with ask guests to give us a 3 or 4 minute bio, so why don't we start there and then we can get into some questions about the campaign.
Fabulous. So, I'm Andrea French. I've been a resident of Salem for the past 13 years, and before that I was a student at Salem State College. That's back when Salem State College. I've been a parent for 13 years, and my oldest has always been with Salem Public Schools when he started his first career in education. And so I have a unique perspective as a parent and as a stakeholder for the schools. I am the president of the Special Education Parent Advisory Council. I've been so for 5 years. Recently, I was on a work team for the Strategic Steering Committee, and in the past, I've been on the Superintendent Search Committee. Currently, I am a Girl Scout troop leader, and I'm a former committee chair for Cub Scout PAC 83. And I am currently the president of the Pickman Park Association in South Salem.
Great. Very busy and involved in your community. What made you decide to run for school committee, and why do you want to be on the school committee?
Well, I first became interested in the school committee when I was working on the Superintendent Search Committee 3 years ago. I had never been actively involved in the school committee before. Like, I hadn't attended any meetings, being a very busy person, and because for the first 2 years of being president of CPAC, I was a sole member. and actually, I was on the Superintendent Search Committee as a representative of CPAC. And I looked at this group, and I said, I'm so happy that there are parents on this group. Back then, Nate Bryant, Rachel Hunt, and Deb Amaral were all parents, and I believe Patrick Schultz still had a child that was a student, and that made me very happy. And then that year, two of those parents decided not to seek re-election, and I thought, that's going to create a void of stakeholder voices. And I think a parent needs to step up and try to run. And I thought, you know, why not me?
Good.
And that's exactly why I am running. I'm doing this because I really care about our schools, because I have such a direct interest in it.
Okay. In May of this year, I believe it was the superintendent. Put forward an issue about school choice for Salem. Do you have an opinion about school choice? Is it good for Salem? Is it bad for Salem? Should we be in
it? I do have an opinion on school choice, and right now my opinion is I'm cautiously optimistic about this. I think that Salem's option to keep it small is wise. There's only 20 students that are going to be enrolled from outside districts, should they choose. We have students that are choosing out-of-district placements, so you know this is going to slightly offset those numbers, which, again, will be good for the bottom line. But beyond that, I think that this program also creates stability for students whose families are on the move looking for affordable housing, and we would be able to keep them in SBS, you know, providing them that stability and the benefit of having continuity in their education during a stressful time. So again, when you look at it, this is all about the students and improving them and giving them what they need. And it's also a nod to Salem Public School that we're opening up our schools because we are proud of them and they are attractive to students in other districts.
This Salem School Department spent a year, better part of a year or more, trying to develop a long-range strategic plan, a five-year plan.
Yeah.
And they have that. It's passed, I think, and vetted out and passed at the end of the 2016 school year. What do you think of that? And tell us what the pluses or minuses are of the plan and your any involvement you had in the process.
Well, I think that we're seeing a level of collaboration that we've previously not seen at Salem. That's exciting. The strategic steering committee used varied stakeholders' thoughts and ideas and turned into this evolved directed plan. I think that its scope is wide. It's very lofty, but I also believe that they're, you know, pooling resources, stakeholders, community members, even officials that don't have an active role in the school committee or the school department. They're getting all of these voices, and they've synthesized it into this very, very huge plan. It's evolving. It's you know, a plan for students that are entering a new phase of the world. I think that as long as they keep up with the collaboration, as long as they keep, if they are working towards the progress and can show that they are making progress towards the goals that they set out, I think that that could take Salem Public Schools to higher levels of education, quality in education.
One of the components of the strategic plan spoke of the need to strengthen family and community engagement in the Salem school system.
Mm-hmm.
What is your take on how the Salem School Committee can go about that?
When I one of the things that is near and dear to me is community engagement. Being a parent myself and looking for that looking for people to welcome me and engage me in the conversation. As a parent who is active and involved, it's not very hard. I think that what we need to do is cast a wider net and pull the people that, you know, haven't had a chance to voice their opinion yet. And I think that, you know, to do that, we need to have very clear channels of communication through multimedia fronts. So an updated and friendly, user-friendly website would be helpful. An editable district-wide calendar, targeted automated calls, and even maybe perhaps a phone app. Most families have have smartphones that can get information, you know, basically at their fingertips whenever they need it. Instead of trying to look and find where can I find this information or who knows this information or trying to find a phone number to call to get information, it could be right there for them. And I think that also, too, you can't just inform people. You also need to welcome them. And the school should be a very welcoming atmosphere for everyone, not just the people that are, like, you know, chomping at the bit to get into school and to see what the, you know, where their kids go to school and excited to talk to the teachers. I think that we need to also be welcoming to the people that are a little bit more, it's a new thing for them to be engaged like that by schools. I think that we need to upgrade our translation services. As president of the CPAC, we have a facilitator that does translation for us. She needs to borrow the headsets for the hard of hearing from the Council on Aging. She uses those headsets, but we don't have our own. And that's like a little tiny thing that the school could do that would make it more welcoming. Other things, too, are, you know, creating a staff that is diverse and celebrating are many, many cultures in Salem.
Great. Now, your involvement in you're a special ed child, and you've become involved in the special education system. And I know, having talked to you prior to this interview, that you've been, while not being an advocate per se, you've been a go-to person when people have had questions about what do you think we should do or so forth. Tell us a little bit about that and your involvement and help, you know, navigating and negotiating a school system as a parent, advocating for your own child on the one hand, and two, as being just a good community person and try to help some other people that are in the same spot that you're in.
Well, the first place I would tell people to go is to Salem CPAC's Facebook page. My vice president, Liz McGovern, she runs that page, and she's constantly updating it with really well thought out resources. But also, yeah, I know my way around an IEP. So a lot of times people are going to ask me, like, what does this mean and what, you know, the service is changing and what should I do? And I always tell people that you need to take have a support group, have somebody that you know that can look at it with another pair of eyes that is knowledgeable enough to say, you know, I know what this means. And then, again, encourage the parents. You are your only child. You're the only advocate for your child. There is, and so you have to make sure that you are well informed if you want your child to be successful. And to do that, you should have a healthy support network. Salem CPAC, that's what we strive to do. We're a parent resource. We're just made up of parents. We act as a liaison between parents and administration. And you know, we're there to we book speakers usually from the Federation for Children with Special Needs in Boston, which is a local advocacy group. They do our basic rights. They do our transitional workshops. We seek out the Commonwealth of Learning speakers, and we're trying to provide not only valuable resources for our parents, but also too like a team, like a network, a support team that says, we're all in this together, and let's help each other out. And we get to meet each other. Our kids get to meet up, and then we become Facebook friends, and it's kind of like this one big happy family.
Well, that's good. What we got a few minutes left. If you could quickly give us a sense of what is your take on the budget process? Do you think that you feel the budget process was a fair one? Are enough financial resources being provided for the Salem School District? And what about the overall facilities, plant and grounds infrastructure? Are they well maintained? Are they well taken care of? Is there a long range plan in place to replace or repair schools? Just your thoughts there.
Now that I think about it, building services and facilities, that was not something that was part of the strategic plan. And many of our facilities are already updated, but of course there's always room for improvement there. But going back to your question in general about budgets, has anyone in the history of society ever been 100% happy with the budget or a budget process? I think that our process is fair, but it's not perfect. There's always room for improvement. But we have to share our resources with police and fire and the DPW. We want to get our kids to school and give them a quality education, but they need to get to school on safe roads, and they need to be safe and secure in their buildings when they get there. A lofty goal would to be to start the budget process for schools with saying, like, we're not going to cut any teaching staff. Again, that's a lofty goal. I think that we can get there. If you want to start small, I think that I'd like to see the city engage more parents in the discussion by putting out the line item budget sooner. And informing a wider audience when the budget hearings will take place so that you can hear the voices of concern and take all of them into consideration.
Great. Well, I want to thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold, and wish you the very best of success in your candidacy to become a member of the Salem School Committee.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you very much for thinking of me and having me on your show.
Great. Take care now.
All right, you too.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're replacing the windows in your home, please see the Anderson 400 Series windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire. The Anderson 400 is attractive, durable, energy efficient, and reasonably priced. Remember, Anderson is the most trusted name in windows. See the Anderson 400 at any of our three locations. That's North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Harrington's Trophy and Awards has been rewarding the North Shore for over 25 years. Hi, I'm Kevin Harrington.
And I am Marty Harrington, and we are known for our local family business, providing custom trophies, plaques, screen printing, embroidery, and much more. We offer a variety of services such as engraving wedding gifts, medals for charity walks, youth sports trophies, and uniforms. From the newest style performance wear to your everyday work shirts, we are your one-stop shop. Whether it's a fantasy football, warm-up suits for your team, end-of-the-year banquet gifts, or recognizing excellence, we pride our business on our exceptional customer service and quality products. Located in Lynn, or visit our website at harringtontrophy.com.
People come in, take a seat. You're really in for a treat at Sylvan Street. A great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. We treat you right, day or night. Satisfy your appetite. Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Catch a game with friends, meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our next guest is Bob Wynott, former city councilor from Ward 3, former city councilor at large, former city clerk for many, many years, and now a candidate for city council again in Gloucester. Bob, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Josh. Nice to be here.
What, you've thrown your hat in to be a leader in Gloucester again. What was your thinking about wanting to get active again in politics?
Well, number one, it's very frustrating to sit back and not have a say in things when you've been used to doing that for 25 years. I think that I can add something with my institutional memory. History repeats itself if you don't.
Those who forget history are condemned to repeat it. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, yes. George Santana. I don't know how to pronounce his last name, but yeah. And I think I have a very good knowledge of the charter and Robert's Rules of Order and the ordinances from all the years I spent. And I'm a constitutional person. I believe in the U.S. Constitution, and I believe it's still relevant today. And I believe in the charter. And I don't think those things should be just used when they're convenient.
That's interesting you say that, because one of the I spent a bit of time this past year reading the charter and the Book of Ordinances and outlining some things, and it seems to me that at least of late that the Book of Ordinances is like the house that Jack built. It goes in lots of different directions, and we don't follow everything. I mean, if you run through the charter and the Book of Ordinances, is like 45, 47 different reports that are supposed to be done on an either annual, semi-annual, or quarterly basis. You're either sent to the mayor, or sent to the mayor and the council, or to a state agency. And I don't see that those all get done. Is it that the ordinances are outdated and they don't need those reports anymore, or people just don't know that they're supposed to do them in the first place?
Well, the ordinance is a big book, and people just use it as a reference book mostly. And I think what should happen is that you should go through the book chapter by chapter, and spend one or two evenings doing that, or have a special meeting and just go through them and see if they're germane anymore. Because I remember when I got to be the city clerk, and they had the emergency snow parking ban that we have now. There was also two snow parking bans still in the ordinance, and that went from January to April or December to March, and they were still in there.
Yeah.
And they weren't superseded, so I got rid of them. But that's what I think happens. I think you just we keep making new ordinances and sticking them in there and having them codified, and we don't go back and look at what's there. And sometimes we ignore the ordinances or we ignore the charter for convenience.
Yeah, I mean, you have issues in there about the charter, for example, says there are certain qualifications that you need to be the community development director or the chief administrator of officer, and the but the community development director, it seems to be a high turnover position, and I'm trying to understand why that is. Do we not pay the people enough? Is it a position, if you get somebody who's outside of Gloucester, it seems like it takes them a couple of years to get acclimated to Gloucester and all the different things that are assigned to community development. How do you fix that?
Well, first of all, I don't believe job descriptions should be in the charter.
Yeah.
Because the charter is like the Constitution, it's very difficult to change. You can make some small changes in it, but to make any major changes, you need to have a charter commission. And
that's like a 4 or 5 year process, isn't it?
Yeah, it takes a long time, and that's good. Except that it's we haven't had anybody that had the fire in their belly enough to go door to door and get the signatures, and that's the only way it can happen. You're never going to get it standing at the supermarket. But having said that, that's not what I'm. As far as the jobs are concerned, we've had several community development directors, I think 3 or 4, that have not had the advanced degree in planning, and I'm sure you're aware of that.
Yeah.
And we've done it anyway, and we ignore it when we want to get the right person. But I think that the job description should not be in the charter. They should be something that breeds and goes along with the times. And I don't necessarily think degrees are the end all be all. When I was at GE, I only had 2 years of college, and I had 17 college graduates working for me. And I think the most important thing is you have to be a manager. Hello?
Yeah, no, we're here.
Okay, something that's, my phone is going black. But anyway, I think management is the most important thing. I don't think a DPW director needs to be a registered professional engineer. I don't think that the community development director needs to have an advanced degree in planning. They should have experience in the area, and they should be proven management skills. Because I think if you're a manager and you have good people working for you, you're able to determine which ones are giving you the right advice and which ones aren't. And when you stack a bunch of degrees into a job description and don't have or equivalent, that got us in trouble with the fire chief back when we hired the new fire chief. Because it didn't say or equivalent, and there was a lot of contention there. I think or equivalent makes a lot of sense, because there are some people that are just awesome. You interview them, you know they're going to do the job, and if they don't have if they have huge like doctor's degree, master's degrees, they're probably not going to stay here as long, because with all that background and a couple of years of experience here, you can go to a bigger city like Boston and make way more money. So I think we need to get people that fit the jobs in Gloucester.
What when you look at the city's website, and I've looked at, because we don't just interview Gloucester candidates, we're interviewing people from several other cities north of Boston. Every city's website is different. How well does our website, in terms of the content, its appearance, how well it showcases Gloucester to the outside community, and how functional and updated is it to the internal community?
Well, I don't think that the website has to substitute for the Chamber of Commerce. I think it should be a tool that's useful for people to navigate through and find what they're looking for and be able to get into the departments and find out what they do, who the people are, and see the ordinances, see the charter and things like that. But I don't think you have to make it into, like I say, the annual report does a lot of things, selling the city. And I think the website, you don't want to make it overcomplicated, and you don't want to turn it into a glossy that could be done by the Chamber of Commerce. I do think one thing that you mentioned to me before was the languages, the different languages that we have. I think there ought to be a link to one of those language translators. I used to use them in the city clerk's office when someone brought in a piece of paper that I couldn't understand. There was a language translator, I don't remember the name of it, and I just used to type in the words as they, and then say translate from Portuguese to English, and it translates them pretty well. And I think something like that would be good to have in there, because we certainly can't have everything in three or four languages.
Yeah. Yeah, what the marijuana law changing the recreational use has given is given cities and towns some challenges in terms of zoning, permitting, enforcement. What's your take on that, and how has the city of Gloucester handled it this time out, and what changes do you see coming down the line, if any?
Well, I have to be honest. I did not vote for the recreational marijuana, although I'm a firm believer in medical use of marijuana. I think it's a great thing. You can cure somebody's pain or and help them along. But having said that, it was passed, and so it is the law of the land. But I think you have to be really careful with the zoning. They shouldn't be able to put them just anywhere they want. And the people should have a say in it. I think if the people in Gloucester voted not to have one in Gloucester, then we could have a referendum on that. Then I think we should follow that referendum. But other than that, I think we should make sure it's not in neighborhoods and in certain parts of downtown. Maybe you don't want a marijuana place right in the middle of some places where kids go in. So you have to really control it with that.
What we got about a minute and a half left. Just the city has lots of plans. They have a community development plan that was published in 2001 that needs to be updated. They have a harbor development plan. They've got lots of plans. And plans are, in theory at least, to be operational and updated and showing the way of the future, navigating the direction for the city, not sitting on a shelf collecting dust. What do you see, what needs to happen to get the plans that we have updated and something happen from there?
Well, it just about every studies that we've done, Gloucester has done thousands of studies over the years, and most of them do wind up on the shelf. We had a couple of police department studies and a couple of fire department studies, and they just wind up because no one's responsible for it. If you have a Plan 2000 and you have a big committee, you need to have one person that's on the city payroll that's responsible for keeping that in the news and letting people know what's happening. Because if you just have a committee and the thing is done, it just sits there. You need someone in the city that's going to stay with that and make sure that we stay on it.
Okay, great. Want to thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Want to wish you
one more thing.
Oh, go ahead.
One more thing, real quickly. On those reports, I looked at some of them, and the one that's important is the audits of all the departments, because at times you think there's something lacking in the department, and when it's brought up on the council, you get a lot of resistance because you felt to be picking on them. And I think when it comes out in an audit, and then you work with it on a professional level. And a lot of times it's just understaffing. I do think that the building inspector's office is understaffed, and so you want to do that without having people think that you're criticizing the job they're doing.
Great. Thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold, and we wish you the greatest success in your candidacy for city council, and I'm sure we'll see you at the pancake breakfast on next Saturday.
We already ordered the tickets.
Great. Thank you, Bob.
Okay, bye-bye.
Alrighty then, that takes care of it for this week. We will be back next Friday, and you got people lined up for then?
We're filling in. I can't tell you who's on next week. I can tell you that Joseph Gigolonia, a candidate for Ward 2, will be on the 25th, as will Joel Favazza, a candidate for re-election to the Gloucester School Committee. Jen Holmgren, a candidate for Gloucester City Council, will be on September 1st, as will Domingo Dominguez be candidate for City Council in Salem on the 1st. And then on the 8th, Jamie Figueroa will be a candidate, who is a candidate in city for City Council at large, and Lynn will be a guest. And we've got invites out to, you know, a slew of other people around the six towns. So.
All righty. That's Josh Arnold. I'm Rick Moore. Bill Proposky is our producer and engineer. Bye-bye.